So last week we spoke about the way Gemara is structured and how it works and how Gemara is designed to impact the way we think, and it kind of builds the circuitry of our minds in a very specific way, in a Jewish way of thinking. And the different forms of Gemara structure. We talked about why Gemara is even printed the way that it's printed. There's nothing easy about it. There's nothing in the way the Gemara is printed, learnt, or taught that encourages ease of understanding. And as we discussed last week, the attempt that often happens nowadays, and this is quite new, of repackaging Gemara in a way that is easier for the Western mind to understand, is tragic. In one way, it's positive because it gives us access to Gemara, but in other ways, it's tragic because it doesn't give us the benefit of what Gemara is designed to do, which is change the way we think. So we're adapting Gemara to our Western minds instead of adapting our minds to Gemara. And what we'll be doing in the Shishir is what I did promise you, is we will not be adapting anything to Western minds. We're just going to be putting our minds into the Gemara system and see what happens when we try and think through the Gemara. But it's hard. It's hard because it's not the way we naturally think. We naturally think in a linear way. We naturally think in a very classified sort of way. And the Gemara is very, very free-thinking, and it's developmental, and it's, I call it spherical thinking. You start in the middle and then you move out in all directions, building a bigger and bigger sphere. There's no linear approach, which makes it harder until you get it. So if you look, for example, the way the art scroll does it, see the art scroll, when you look at the English, it's all neat and tidy. There's a part at the top, there's a part over here, there's a part here, there are heavy things, there are little subheadings, they do it very beautifully. Makes it much easier to understand. But this is not about ease of understanding, this is about allowing your mind to grapple with Hashem's Torah. To struggle with it, to grapple with it, to sweat over it, so that in the end of it, as you grasp something, you haven't only grasped the concept, you've grasped the way of thinking to get to the concept. So for example, tonight we said we're going to be dealing with, can you use scientific data to rely or to clarify uncertainty? From a halachic point of view, from a Torah perspective, how reliable or to what extent is it okay to use scientific data to resolve uncertainty? So in one way, we would say, clearly we do. We use it all the time. We look outside. If it's daytime, then it's, you know, if we don't know whether it's time to daven shachris or not and we haven't got a watch, you look outside. And if it's light, you daven shachris. And if it's getting dark, you daven mincha, ma'ariv. We're using that all the time. And yet, on the other hand, we don't. Is it feasible that we're eating microscopic bugs all the time? Of course we are. So what about the kashrus? Well, it doesn't matter. But they're there, scientifically they're there, yeah, but halakhically they're not. So there's a difference between halakhic reality and scientific reality. So how do you manage we just started the Gemara portion, Daniel. So how do you manage the tension between scientific data and halakhic data when they don't merge? What do? And a lot of the incorrect, if one could call it that, psakim, sometimes in psak halakha, a lot of it is about around this, people not understanding that area, making halakhic decisions based on scientific criteria in situations where you can't. So 99% of the time, I would think that if some women were teaching this Mishnah and you were to say, what is the subject of the Mishnah? They would say the subject of the Mishnah is buying an animal from a non-Jew when you don't know whether the animal has given birth before or not. In other words, whether the next calf to be born is a Bechor or isn't a Bechor. That's the topic of the Mishnah. I would say the topic of the Mishnah is dealing with uncertainty and the role of scientific fact in the clarifying of uncertainty. And that's what we're going to get into. So we learned the Mishnah last time. I'll run through the Mishnah again. One of the things that one has to do, if you really want to take Gemara seriously, you've got to start learning it by heart. That doesn't mean you have to know each word by heart. You don't have to be able to recite it, but you have to be able to, we call it, recite the Shakta Vitaya. Say it. You've got to be able to recite the bullet points, the arguments. And you know, what's strange to me also is everybody's trying to make Gemara easier and easier, and then they go and they do all these mind games to keep your mind sharp and to avoid getting dementia and all these things, because now they've just discovered, after we've been working on this for 2,000 years, that if you exercise your mind in a challenging way, there's a better chance that your mind stays sharp longer. Like a big discovery. Every other muscle we've known this about, that if you use it, the longer you use it, the more you use it, better it's going to be. The mind, we thought, you know, get to the 60s, start taking it easy, play golf, retire a little bit, and all of a sudden we wonder why people are losing their minds when they're getting older. And nobody's making the connection. They're losing their minds because they're not using it. Well, as long as they were using their minds, I'm not saying everybody, obviously there are physical reasons that these things happen that one hasn't got control over. But isn't it possible that generally when people are using their minds actively and are challenged and pushing their minds to the edge of its ability, like one does with a muscle when one's developing, it isn't possible that your mind stays sharper. And so it is with Gemara. So to make Gemara easy and then do mind games to keep your mind sharp, I mean, what's the point of that? Just learn Gemara properly and you don't have to do the mind games. There's no better mind game than Gemara. And one of it is memorizing. So and that requires a lot of hard work, especially as we get older, it gets harder. To memorize. So we're talking about the Mishnah, and one of the ways to memorize a Mishnah is to picture it. A Mishnah is a case study. So if we look at the Mishnah, let's read through it first, and then try and picture it, try and see it in imagery in front of you. So it's Halokeach behemah min aved kechavi. A person buys an animal from a non-Jew. Ve'eino yodea im bichro im lo bichro. That's the case, and he doesn't know if the animal has given birth or has not yet given birth. What difference does it make? The difference it makes is whether the next calf is going to be a bechor or isn't going to be a bechor. And we don't know. And we said last week, so ask the non-Jew. Why don't we just ask him? And we said, no, the non-Jew is not going to have any interest in giving us an honest answer. In fact, he's going to have an interest in telling us that the animal has already had a calf. Because if the animal has already had a calf, then the next animal is not going to be a bechor, which makes it more financially worthwhile. Because if the first next animal is a bechor, what do you have to do with it? You have to give it away to the kohen. You lose the value. So the seller is going to have an interest in telling the buyer that the animal has already had a calf. So we can't rely on the non-Jew to tell us the truth. He doesn't have Yerushalayim. He doesn't care whether it's... He'll do what makes good business sense to him. So how else are we going to determine whether this animal has had a bechor or not? Rabbi Shmuel Omer Eiz Batshnata. Rabbi Shmuel says we get into sons. If it's an aes, if it's a goat, 1 year old, vaday le kohen. Then we know the next calf goes to the kohen, because there's no way a 1 year old goat could have had a calf before then. Goats don't have calves in their first year. Mikan ve'elach, but if it's after 1 year, sofek. Then we're in doubt. But until 1 year, there is no doubt. Rachel bat shtayim, vaday le kohen. If it's a lamb, until 2 years old, certainly belongs to the Kohen. There's no way a lamb can have a baby in its first 2 years. We can't veil it, sofik. If it's more than 2 years old, we don't know. Can we establish whether the animal is 1 year old or 2 year old? That we can establish. And also, the owner would probably be believed. You just say to them, how old is the animal? There's no reason for the seller to lie about that. Poro v'chamor, a cow or a donkey. But not shalosh vaday le kohen. If they're 3 years old, certainly the kohen. Mikan ve'elach sofek. If it's more than 3 years old, it's a sofek. The Gemara goes on. The Mishnah goes on, and we won't do that right now because it's not relevant. We'll do the last line or two. But so there, just picture it in your mind. You don't have to ever say the words. Halokeach behemah min aved kechavim. If you were a young kid learning in cheder, then you would learn it by heart because that would be very valuable and helpful. But we're not going to go there. Just picture it. You can picture a farmer buying animals from a non-Jew. And when we're talking about the economic values, we said last week he might not be buying one. He might be buying 1,000 animals from a non-Jew. And he needs to know. 1,000 animals who haven't had a calf yet, that means he's going to have to give 1,000 calves away to a kohen. That's a huge amount of money. So this is a big issue. So he's buying this from the non-Jew, and he has no way of ascertaining whether or not the animal has had a calf before. So the Mishnah says scientific fact. That's what you go by. Couldn't, if it's a cow, couldn't have had a calf if it's less than 3. If it's a lamb, couldn't have had a calf if it's less than 2. If it's a goat, couldn't have had a calf if it's less than 1. That's what it does. And the Gemara goes on and says, well, is it really just about having a calf or not? What happens if it's had a miscarriage? And that would also mean it's not a Bechor. And there are different ways of knowing whether a goat has had a miscarriage. And the Gemara later on will get into that in some detail. The Mishnah just touches it on it. But let's get down to the third last line of the Mishnah. You'll see where the Gemara starts, where you've got Gimel Mem, a big Gimel Mem. That's where the Gemara starts. Until then, it's Mishnah. So if you go up from the where it says Gemara, you go up three or four lines, you'll see that it says Zeh HaKlal. Have you got that? It's about 10 lines from the beginning of the Mishnah. In the middle of the line, Zeh HaKlal. This is the principle.
You're the
sorry?
From
you got it? So Zeh HaKlal, this is the rule. Kol sheyadua shebichra ein kan l'kohen klum. If you know that this animal has had a calf before, the kohen gets nothing. V'chol shelo bichra harei zeh l'kohen. If you know the animal couldn't have had a calf before, it belongs to the kohen. Ve'im sofek, and if you're in doubt, ye achel b'memo lebalim. The owner, you do not give it to the kohen, but nor can the owner eat it. It's in a suspended kind of state, and you have to wait until the animal develops an imperfection. When it has an imperfection, if it's definitely a bechor, even if it has an imperfection, it belongs to the kohen. But when it's a doubtful bechor, it's a safek bechor, and has an imperfection, the owner can use it once it has an imperfection. That's the din, that's the halakha, which we'll go into. For tonight, all we have to know is the idea that if you buy an animal from a non-Jew and you don't know whether the animal has had a calf yet or not, you go by the age, because below a certain age, it couldn't have had a calf. And if the animal has not yet reached that age, you must assume that the next calf is a bechor. That's what the Mishnah says so far, and that's the piece that you've got to remember.
Just about the klal, isn't it like, kind of obvious, at least the first part, why would it even have to say...
Yes, so we're going to go into Zeh HaKlal, into what that means, what that adds, what we didn't know before, what is different.
How do you know the birth date of the animal?
So you either ask the non-Jew, or they had ways of being able to tell that scientifically as well. Now, I mentioned to you that when you're learning Gemara, the other complicated part of Gemara is it's not all on the page. There are 20 volumes of Gemara, some 30-something Masechtas, nearly 40 Masechtas, and they hyperlink. So when in technology, this is something we've just learned how to do very recently. You're on something and you don't know exactly what it means, and you press a link and it takes you somewhere else, and you get the background information, you come back to the first one, and sometimes you go on a few hyperlinks and you go back. Gemara is hyperlinked, and you've got to be able to hold it all in your mind, not just what's in front of you on this particular page, which is why you've got a batch of photostats, which I sent to you to print out, because we've got to look, this piece of Gemara, the subject we're discussing tonight, what do you do when scientific reality and halakhic reality aren't properly aligned, is a topic that we'll only understand by looking at the contrast between this Mishnah and two other places. We've got to learn some Chulin, and we've got to learn some Avodah Zorah. So we're going to have to touch two other Masechtas in order to even begin to work with this. So the piece in Chulin is a very interesting one. So you should have a page from Chulin in your printout. Is that right?
Yeah.
And if you don't have it, you're just going to have to listen carefully.
Let's see okay?
The piece in Chulin Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. Chulin Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, and we're starting five lines from the top. And as you'll see, this has nothing to do with our subject. And yet, it will have everything to do with our subject. What's the case here? I'm a rabbi. Now we're going to get into a bit of animal physiology. So I'm happy we've got some physicians here. You can keep us on the straight and narrow. V'omar rabbi, said rabbi, hey uni isla l'reya. The lung, we're talking about an animal lung, has five lobes. How many lobes does a human lung have? Also five lobes. The lung has five lobes. So far we're on track. Gemara and science are aligned so far. Apo klape gavro. When the animal is hanging Now imagine the shochet has shechted the animal. Now we want to check whether it's kosher or not. The way that's done is the animal hangs from its legs, head down, chest facing the shochet. Okay, so what's on the left of the shochet is the animal's right-hand side. What's on the right of the shochet is the animal's left-hand side. With me? Because the animal's facing you, upside down, chest facing you. That's like when I come to you for a checkup, that's what you do to me, right? Hang me upside down and then... So, ape klape gavra, when the face is facing the shochet, the man, tzlata miyamina, three lobes are on the right, which means it's the left three side of the animal. On the left side of the lung, there are three lobes, v'tauti mismala, and there are two on the right hand side. Doesn't work with humans.
No, we said in humans, the right lung's got three lobes, and the left lung's got two lobes.
Interesting. So here it's the other way around. The three lobes would be on the animal's left. The three lobes would be on the animal's left, it says. Chasir or yatir, if it has less than five, less than three on the one side and two on the other, or chalif, or switched around, the three and the two are on the other sides, treif, or the animal is treif. You can't eat the animal. So that's one of the things we check after shechita. How yatirta de atay lekame de merema? There was a case of an animal that had an extra lobe, and they didn't know what to do with the animal, and they brought the shayla to merema for a psak. Can this animal be eaten or not? Again, in our days, it's not a terribly serious thing, because if you're not sure, if the shochet's not sure, you give it to the goyim. There's a big non-Jewish market for beef, and if we can't use it, the non-Jewish market will take it. So they don't waste time with these things. But in those days, there wasn't. The non-Jews used to eat a chazer, and there wasn't a market for kosher animals. So if it isn't kosher, that's a huge loss for the farmer. And so they would always ask a shayla. They would go to a rabbi who would try and work out a way to make it kosher so that there wouldn't be this huge loss. So they came to Marema, who was one of the great authorities of the time. Havayativ Rav Acha Abava. Rav Acha was sitting outside the gate of Marema's house. And he saw them bringing this question of the animal into Marema's house. And he waited till they came out again. Omale, my omalacha. He was very curious. He said, so what did he tell you? You didn't ask me. You passed me, says Rav Acha. You didn't ask me. You went in to ask the specialist. Okay, what did he tell you about this animal? Omale akshara. Niala, he said he made it kosher. He said it was kosher. Even though we've just learned that Rava said, if it has more or less, or on the wrong side, it's treif. Omale, so Rav Acha, so we have three characters here. There's really four. Rava, who stated the law. Amemar, who applied the law. Rav Acha sitting at the gate, and the person running in and out with the shayla. He says to the Rav Acha at the gate, says to the man who takes the shayla in, Hadar Ayla Kame, go back inside and tell the rabbi that was an incorrect decision, because Rava says it should be treif. And perhaps Amemar is not up to date with what Rava has said. Omale, so Amemar says to the person who runs in again, Zil emele laman de yativ abava, go and tell the guy who's sitting at the gate, whoever he is, let hilchse kavase de Rava, that the halacha is not like Rava. I know that that's what Rava said, but we don't paskin like Rava. And even though this animal has an extra lobe, the animal is kosher, Rava won't eat the animal, but I'm paskining that the animal is kosher. Vahani milid beyateres, if there's an additional piece. Vahani milid de kaima bedara duuni. And this, that it's kosher, according to Amemar, is only if it's aligned. So it's aligned with it. So you've got three on the one side, two on the other side, and there's an additional one aligned with the two or the three in the same kind of plane. Aval beni beni trefa, but if there's an additional one in the middle, between the two sides of the lung, that would make a treif. Even Amemar would agree that. Another story. There was a case with an animal who had an extra lobe on the center. So now this certainly can't. Rava said any extra lobe is no good. Our Maimer said, no, we hold an extra lobe is okay, provided it's in those areas. But if it's in the center, it isn't good. This one came to Rav Ashi. Sova Rav Ashi lemitra, for Rav Ashi was about to say, sorry, this is treif. Omale Rav Huna Mar Bar Avia, and Rav Huna Mar Bar Avia said to Rav Ashi, he intervened and said, well, just before you say treif, kol hani chiyu braisa hachislu. I know that all those animals in the field are like that. This is the way these animals are. They've all got this extra part of their body. The karula tavcha in enusa devarda, and the butchers have a name for it. They call it the lobe of the rose. It's like a little rose. It's a very small lobe in the middle of the chest of the animal, not on either side of the lung, but in the middle of the lung, and it's called inunisa devarda. And therefore, it's kosher, because it's normal with the animals. There's nothing unhealthy about it. There's nothing unusual. These animals, that's how they're made, and therefore it's okay. So we're beginning to see the Chachomim are taking account of the physiology of the period, of where it is, when it is. Even though there are clear statements that this additional lobe should make the animal treif, but not if all animals have got it. This becomes the norm. Bahani Mili, the Gemara goes on to say Migavai. This is only if it's on the inside, in other words, facing the chest of the animal, but if it's on the back side of the lung, towards the back of the animal, then even if it's the size of a hadas leaf, it would be treif. So that's the Gemara. So then we're seeing different views about abnormalities of the lung, and finally saying, but when an abnormality becomes normal, it's normal. So we see that things change. Now I want you to look at Tosfot. Now we on every page of Gemara we've got Rashi and we've got Tosfot, and in people's desire to cover a lot of ground and to do a lot of learning, they sometimes leave Tosfot because Tosfot you've got to work very hard on. Rashi explains the Gemara as it is. The Rashi is like your teacher. You can't really understand the Gemara without Rashi, but Tosfot is the hyperlinker. Tosfos connects the Gemara with other Gemara's questions, highlights inconsistencies, extrapolates ideas. So Tosfos is very important to the process of thinking of the Gemara. Now, we're not going to do this whole Tosfos because that would take us a long time. The part that I'm interested in is four lines from the bottom, in the second half of the line. So Tosfos is the left-hand column of Rashi's script. And you'll see there a phrase that starts, V'nire de'en ra'aya. Can you see that? In the Tosfos, four lines from the bottom towards the end of the line, the second half of the line, V'nire de'en ra'aya mi'behemot shelanu. Don't bring proofs from our animals. This is now in the time of Tosfos. So the Mishnah was finished in the year 200. The Gemara was written between 200 and 600, let's say. Tosfos is writing in the 11th or 12th century. So this is now 1,000 years after the Mishnah, and he's saying, don't get the scientists to come in and tell you what the animals are like today, and therefore this doesn't make any sense. Deshema chalukot mishalahem, because they might have been different. Things might have been different then. So yes, we have a different story, and nature changes. There's an evolution that takes place, and things change. They're talking about how things were then. Now things are different, and just as we said, the animals at their time had this little extra lobe in the center of their lung, and that became normal. So in our case, maybe there are six lobes, or maybe there are four lobes, or maybe the left and the right is switched, and that's become the norm. Don't bring proofs from our animals. It's irrelevant to the Gemara. What's important is what is normal, a normal, healthy animal. Ki da'ashkechan beferik halokeach behema. Tosfos brings a proof from where? From our Mishnah in Bechorot, the Mishnah we've just learned. So Tosfot is busy learning. Think how the mind works. Tosfot is busy learning in Chulin and makes a link in it in his mind to the Gemara piece of Gemara that we've just to the piece of Mishnah we've just learned. What did we learn? De para bat shloshah sheyalda avadai lekohen. What did the Mishnah say? A three-year-old cow. The next calf belongs to the kohen because there's no way a three-year-old cow could have a calf. If you bought it at 3 years old, it's never had a cough. Says, of course, for the behemot shelanu, yoldot lifamim b'shana shniya. And in our days, you often have calves that are born when the cow is 2 years old. So you see, you can't question the Mishnah with science, because science develops and changes. And you've got to take the principle. The principle is what's normal then and what's normal now. So what is Tosfot saying about our Mishnah? What would happen if today you went to buy a 3-year-old cow?
Sofek.
It's a Sofek. You cannot assume that it's never had a baby. But the Mishnah says if it's 3 years old, it's fine. Yeah, but today things are different. So you see how you can't be dogmatic with halacha. You can't just look at the halacha and say, but it says. You've got to understand what it says and why it says. As we will see, sometimes you do have to be dogmatic, but sometimes you don't. To know when you have to be dogmatic and when you have to be flexible, that's what a Talmud Chacham. That's part of the art, and that's why we learn Gemara. To learn those boundary lines, to learn how to deal with them. When do you, when don't you? Why in some cases do you and some don't you? So that's what Tosfos says starts here. Don't latch on to the numbers in the Gemara or in the Mishnah. Because there's a principle. The principle is go by science. At the time of the Mishnah, science was 3 years or less, the animal couldn't have had a calf. Today it's 2 years or less, the animal couldn't have had a calf. So go by today's science. You don't have to go by science in the time of the Gemara. In the same way, 3 lobes, 2 lobes, nothing in between. That was the time in Gemara. What the Gemara is saying is the animal has to be healthy. If the animal has an abnormality in the structure of its lung, the animal is treif. What is an abnormality? Go by the norms of your geography, of your region, and your period. Consult the scientists and find out what the norm is. So that's how Tosfos wants to learn it. Then he goes on. This is the interesting part. He says, Imlo, but maybe not. Because perhaps Shenomar, maybe there's another way of understanding this, Dechashi Yoledit B'Shana Shniya, maybe the Mishnah knows that it can have a baby in the second year. But Tashash Kocha, it weakens the cow, V'Shuv Lo Teled Ad Shana Revi'it, and then it won't give birth for another 2 years. So what would that tell us? If the animal has a cow then in the third year, you know that it's a Bechor. Because it couldn't have had a second one in the third year. But it could have had a first one in the second year. So Tosfos is retracting a little bit, isn't he? And saying, maybe the Mishnah is right even scientifically as well. Maybe there isn't a misalignment between science and the Mishnah. Is what the Tosfos wants to say. Okay, so we got that. So here we've taken a piece of Chulin. We've learnt about some science of the structure of the lung of cows in the time of the Gemara. We learned that in certain parts the structure of the lung was different, and that changed the halacha. And Tosfos says, and maybe the structure of the lung is even more different today, and that will change the halacha again, because what you've got to be governed by is the principle of the halacha, not the fact of the halacha. That's what you've got to do. But Tosfos, maybe you can't bring a proof of that from here, because maybe there isn't a misalignment. Now we have to journey further. And we have to journey to Avodah Zarah, a different Masechta. And that you also have a further stat on. But here we learn about something very different. Do you see how it keeps your mind agile and young? Because look how you're moving all over, backwards and forwards. You can't get stuck in one place. You've got to be able to move around. So this is Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Chof Dalad Amud Beis, and where I want you to look at is right in the middle of the page, but towards the end of the line, it says Rabbi Yochanan Amar. Can you see that? It's about the middle of the length of the page, and at the end of the line, there's a Rabbi Yochanan Amar.
So did you get to this? Is this referenced in our...
I'll show you where it's referenced. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Rabbi Yochanan said, Gvul Yeshla. Here's what we're dealing with here, a very interesting case. The Mishnah at the beginning of this Perek, Ein Ma'amidim, says an interesting thing. When you're on your horse or your donkey and you need to stop overnight and you have to stop at a non-Jewish inn, in those days, the non-Jews of those days were idol worshippers. They were secular liberalists. right? Not religious non-Jews like we have today. They were secular liberal people who had no religious compunctions. And therefore, you could not be sure, says the Gemara. Now, this might sound weird, but believe you me, in a few years' time, it will not sound weird anymore. The chances are, there is a reasonable chance that the non-Jewish innkeeper would have had sex with your animal. Because they do that. And that's very serious, because Ben Noach, it's one of the seven Noahide laws, you can't do that. And if it's your animal, you've been a party to that action. So don't leave your animal alone with a non-Jewish person in that time.
Yichud.
It's kind of yichud. And the next piece of the Mishnah is yichud as well. And a woman shouldn't be alone either with it. And that's, and mark my words, in some years' time, already we're treating animals, I see in Beverly Hills here, the animals in the stroller, the kids don't even exist anymore. Animals are becoming little people. And it's not going to be long before people are going to want the rights to get married to an animal, and the animal should have the rights of a spouse and should be able to inherit and get medical insurance and all those things. I know it sounds strange. Make a note of it. Open the note in 10 years' time and tell me where we've got to. But that certainly was like that in those days. It was the animals had equal rights, and people and animals had sexual relationships, and that's what used to happen in those days. And therefore, you couldn't do that. On the other hand, you can buy an animal from a non-Jew for a sacrifice. Ask the Gemara, how is that possible? Because if an animal has had sex with a human being, then the animal can't be used as a sacrifice, because an avera has been done on the animal. So how can you buy an animal from a non-Jew if you can't deposit your animal in the non-Jew's stable overnight? How does that work? So the Gemara goes through various answers, and here says Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Gevul Yeshla, there is a boundary line. If an animal has sex with a human being less than 3 years old, where the animal is less than 3 years old, the animal becomes sterile. And therefore, non-Jews don't do that. They have a morality. You don't damage the animal's chances of being able to have a calf. But from 3 years old, it doesn't do any harm to the animal's capacity to have a calf afterwards, or a baby afterwards. And therefore, we're allowed to buy an animal from a non-Jew if the animal is less than three. You can't buy an animal from a non-Jew if it's more than three, because the animal might have had sexual relationships with a human, and that would make it disqualified for a sacrifice. Esve asks the Gemara, Kol hani tiyufte shani luhuprutam ibet gimel shanim? All the various questions the Gemara has dealt with in the last couple of pages, we answer in this way. There's a difference whether it's less than 3 years old or more than 3 years old. Tashma, now I'm going to bring you a proof. This is a case in Samuel, in Shmuel, where the ark, if you'll remember, was stuck in Ashdod for seven months. And then they recover it, and in order to know whether this was an act of God or it was a human act, they take some cows to pull a chariot on which the ark is placed. They put calves back in, they lock up the calves. The calves cry for the mothers, and we see whether the mothers are willing to walk away from the calves towards in the destination they need to go, or whether they're pulled back. So you want to see if this is natural or supernatural. So these are the cows that we're talking about. And finally, it says, Tashma, and these must have been cows that were less than 3 years old. Otherwise, we wouldn't have used them for that purpose. Because it says, and the cows were brought as a sacrifice. How could you bring the cows as a sacrifice if they could possibly have had relations with a human being? Must be less than 3 years old. Okay. Matkifla Ravuna Breda Rav Natan, Osk Ravuna, Imkein Hainu, Ve'et Benehem Kalu Bevait. So what does it say? And the children of these cows, the calves of these cows, they locked in the building. How could they have calves if they're less than 3 years old? Not possible. So then the Gemara withdraws and says, no, so we've got to go back to our earlier answer. You're right, it can't be. We're talking there about cows fit for a sacrifice who are less than 3 years old. So clearly, and the calves are used. So clearly they could have had calves at less than 3 years old. We see that in the time of the Chumash, in the time of the Tanakh, never mind later on. So then the Gemara says, no, so clearly it can't be that the three-year-old is the cutoff. These cows must have been older than 3 years old, because if they were only 3 years old, they couldn't possibly have had calves. And we've got to answer this conflict a different way altogether. So look at Tosfot here, on the right-hand side. The Rashi script on the right-hand side. Para b'chamor bat shalosh shanim vaday lekohen. Can you see that Tosfot? It's the second last Tosfot. A para and a chamor, this is again quoting our Mishnah, that if a para or a chamor, a cow or a donkey is less than 3 years old, it definitely belongs to the kohen. So you see from there that it couldn't have had a baby. Perush, that means, dekodem shalosh vaday lo yalda. Before 3 years old, there's no way these cows could have had calves. Can't be. Ask the Gemara, ask Tosfot. V'yesh lit mo'a, dehamase b'chol yom de para bat shtei shanim yoledet. Anybody knows, any Talmud Chochem, any yeshiva bocher knows that cows can have babies at less than 3 years old. We see it all the time. In those days, people were in touch with nature. Everybody knows that a two-year-old cow can have a calf. V'yesh lomar, answers Tosfot, the vaday ata nishtaneh ha'et mikemo shehaya b'dorot harishonim. Nature is different to what it was in those days. Kemo b'inanut devada, the same as the Gemara in Chulin, which we've just learned. You see how Tosfot connects all the things up. Connects our Mishnah in Bechorot with the Gemara in Chulin about the lungs, with the Gemara in Avodah Zorah about the calves. Damin and Perikei Trefet kol chivata breita hachi itluhu. We've said all the animals out in the field have this extra lobe. Alma gviyata let lehu v'ata hi b'chol ha'behemot shelanu. So you see that it was only a certain group of animals there that had this extra lobe. Some did, some didn't. In some areas they did, and some they didn't. But today, all animals have got that extra little lobe on their lungs, and it's perfectly normal. So Tosfos here settles the issue of Chulin. Again, in Chulin, where we had the lung issue, Tosfot said, well, two possibilities. Either we must say nature changes, or we must say it's that really an animal could have it, been, even in the time of the Gemara, it could have had a calf at less than two, or at 2 years old, but then not again until 4 years old. Says Tosfos here, this Tosfos says, no ways, because you see from this piece of Gemara, go back to the Sora story in Shmuel Aleph, it's quite clear that even in the time of Tanakh, the Gemara accepts that no cow had a calf at less than 3 years old. So Tosfos are fine. In the time of the Gemara, there's no question about that. But we know today they do have babies at less than 3 years old. So what do we do now? So Tosfos, no big deal. So nature's changed. So what? So we've got to go by scientific data. You don't go by what the Mishnah says exactly. One more piece to that is, if you look on your photostats on the last page, you'll see an interesting Rambam. It's just one little paragraph on the last page. This is from the Rambam in Hilchos Shchita, Perek Yud, Halacha Yud Gimel, chapter 10, paragraph 13 in the Laws of Shchita. V'chein elu shemanu v'amru shehen treifa. The Chachomim, the Gemara, has listed all the treifas. Now, treifa means an abnormality in the animal's physiology. Isn't that right? That's what treifa is, like we just learned about with the lungs. And treifa means, by the way, that the animal is unlikely to live for more than a year. That's why the animal is treifa. If we can establish that an animal has an abnormality from which it's likely to die within a year, you can't eat the animal. Afal pi sheyerae bedarkei harufuah, says the Rambam, even though nowadays, in the Rambam's time, using veterinary science, shebiyadeinu, that we have, shemikzatan einan mibitin, that some of these listed treifas don't cause death in a year. The animal can recover. And it can live much longer. Nevertheless, here the Rambam says something very important. Ein lecha ela mashimanu chachamim. You have to go by what the chachamim say, not by what science says. Shenemar al pi haTorah she yirucha. Because it says you've got to make halachic decisions according to the Torah, which the Chachomim determined, not by any other factors. So now we've got two very conflicting pieces to work from. We've got our Mishnah with three Tosfosim that we're looking at. There's the our own Tosfos, which we haven't learned yet. There's our Tosfot, there's the Tosfot in Chulin, and there's the Tosfot in Avodah Zarah, all saying nature changes, and you've got to take that into account when you make halachic decisions. And the Rambam saying, nature might change, but you don't take that into account when you make halachic decisions. So how does the Rambam learn? How does he deal with Tosfot? How does he deal with these Gemaras that we've talked about? And we'll review it in 2 weeks' time when we go through this again, so we get it all very clearly. How does the Rambam do that? So I just want to give you the key, and we'll discuss it more deeply next time. The key is there's a difference when the Chachomim comments on a halachic reality, which is the outcome of a physical reality. So, it's even if we take the example we gave, that the sun rises, that's time to daven shachris. That's a physical reality. If there was some scientific change, climate change caused the sun to rise an hour later, then we would daven shachris an hour later. We're not going to change the correlation between sunrise and the time you're allowed to daven. But when the Chachomim give a clear halachic classification, you remember I said to you last year, the art of halacha is to classify. Once you've classified, everything flows from the classification. There's no discussion about, if we want to get into the controversial areas, there's no real discussion about whether a woman should put on, or whether a particular individual should put on a tefillin or shouldn't put on tefillin. Are they a man? Are they a woman? What are they? There's halachic classifications. There's an easy way to classify. If a person is a man, they have to put on tefillin every morning. If a person is a woman, they don't have to put it. There's no, she's a woman but, or he's a man but. It doesn't work that way in halacha. Once you know what something is, if something is is treif, then there's no question of how can you eat it and maybe you can eat it. If it's treif, it's treif. That's what it is. So once you've classified, you'll see as we get into the Gemara, it's all about how do you classify. How do you take something unknown and put it into a clear halachic classification? Because once it's in that clear halachic classification, there's no debate. Then it's very clear. The Shulchan Aruch applies and you know exactly what to do with it. The doubts and the uncertainties are in classification. That's where it becomes doubtful. So in the laws, where the Rambam is talking about is the Gemara lists a certain number of symptoms of treifus. The Gemara says this, that, these things make an animal treif. The Gemara also says that when an animal is treif, it doesn't live longer than a year. That second fact can change, but it doesn't change the first fact. Do you follow the difference? So one could say, for example, Shabbos starts at sunset and Shabbos finishes at Tzeis HaKechovim, and it's incredibly healthy to have 25 hours a week off. It's really good for you. What will happen if in 10 years' time or 10 years ago we find it's not good for you? It would be much better for you to be doing something else on Shabbos. It's not good for your health. Well, that fact would change. So we would now have to say, yeah, so Shabbos is not the best thing for your health. But that doesn't mean you don't keep Shabbos. Shabbos doesn't change. Do you follow the difference? So we're very easy and open to acknowledge science's discoveries and evolution. Some of them will have halachic impact and some of them will not. But it won't change the classifications of halacha. It will only change the implications of those classifications. So once the Rambam says, once the Gemara has determined this is the list of treifus, this, that, there's a whole list of them, that will never change. The fact that treifus leads to death within a year of the animal, that can change backwards and forwards, and who cares? At that time, all the Gemara is saying is, in our time, it leads to death in a year. Maybe in 50 years' time or 1,000 years' time, you'll develop veterinary science that will be able to save the animal. That's fine, but the animal's still treif. That doesn't change. Whereas the case we're talking about is knowledge. It's not about halacha. The halacha is, the firstborn goes to a kohen. That's the only halacha. Now the question is, do I know whether it's a firstborn or not? How are you going to know whether it's a firstborn? You're going to look at scientific information. That's the only way you're going to know. Mm-hmm. There's no halachic change. Do you find it? There's an implication of change. Mm-hmm. But the halacha itself isn't changing because of scientific knowledge. Scientific knowledge will never change a halacha. You can find out that eating kosher is not healthy. You can find out it doesn't make a difference. Science will never change halacha. Science will never influence halacha. Science will only influence the application of halacha. What you do with its application, that it can influence. And where we're talking about looking at science to know the reality, and from the reality to determine a halacha, is this a bechor or isn't it? You've got to classify this animal. Is this animal a bechor? If it's a bechor, it goes to the kohen. If it's not a bechor, it doesn't go to the kohen. So that if it's a sofek, what do you do? If it's in doubt, then what do you do? That's about classification. How do you classify? In this case, you classify by means of science. You don't classify by means of what it states in the Mishnah. What it states in the Mishnah is a principle. It's not a dogmatic reality that you've got to abide by. So as we get into it, now this doesn't mean that in one shiur we've resolved the whole issue of the conflict, of how to deal with tensions between science and halakha, but you're beginning to apply your mind. Mind begins to apply the knowledge, the understanding that there are some cases yes, some cases not, the way classification works, the way application works. And as we do more and more of this and you work with it more and more, it becomes more natural for you to be able to understand these differentiations and how and why we work with them in that particular way. So we'll continue that in Yitzhak Hashem in 2 weeks' time.
So there could be a mistake in the Gemara on application.
Well, not a mistake, it's their time. In their time, that was the case.
Yeah, okay.
In their time, that was the case. There wouldn't be a mistake. It would be, in our days, things have changed. Things are not the same as it was there. And there could be a mistake, I guess, in something they couldn't possibly have known scientifically that we know today. So that they could
have. Remember the thing about, they said that, I think, bacteria come from nothing. Is there something like that? And said, well, that's not true. I think they just appear. Is that something like
that? Yeah, there could be something like that, but they would be using metaphorically, they would be saying that they just seem to appear. If it's based on some Kabbalistic thing, then we'll figure out what they mean. Then it's
Rabbi, leaving the animal with the goy, is it matter zechor and
heva? I don't think so. I think they do it with both.
Well, the bechor can be a female.
No. He's talking about depositing your animal with a non-Jewish farmer.
I'm saying
bechor is only a male.
I'm saying, so the first thing that comes out, if it's a female, but it still has to be a male.
Yes.
In other words,
the first is a female, and the second animal is a male.
You don't know if the person had, if you don't have this, if the animal has given birth yet. It's more than that. You need to know whether it gave birth to a male.
Yes. What we're saying is until 3 years old, there's not even a question.
Yes.
Until 3 years old, couldn't have given birth to anything.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
And after 3 years old, you can assume it has given birth and it makes no difference to what it gave birth. Male or female, the next thing isn't a bechor.
Yes.
Yeah. You're good with it. Well, you're an experienced learner. It's easy for you.
I've been studying Kulin for the last...
Oh, you know Kulin. Well,
I don't say I know it. I've been studying. In fact, I studied this section very recently.
Good.
I can't tell you when, but that was recently.
Good. Excellent.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
This was a trial the earlier time.
I didn't actually check in with people. Yeah, I'll tell you. It's hard for you. I know it's hard for you. I'm amazed that you came.
Would you like it later?
I would like it later.
So would I.
Oh, hello, Cameron.
Mornings are not an option. Sunday morning is not an option. And the only reason I say that is because Sunday evenings are weddings, but that is some happy occasions.
You've got the mailing list. On the last email, yeah. Send an email out to people and ask them.
Well, was it okay with me first?
Yes, I could do it.
What time are you talking?
Depends what time.
No, I'm just suggesting. This is still works, but you know.
There will always be weeks. Every week there'll be people who can't make it.
And unfortunately, you're sending recordings, so you can't.
But it's not. But it's not the same. There'll always be people who can't make it. Whereas in the morning it is easier. But people have other difficulties. But if you want to put that out and ask people, put it out as a suggestion. Let's see what people say, and we can check again next time. I'm sure next week, and I think mention that in your email. That, you know, in 2 weeks' time, for sure we'll. It'll be at 7:30, but you're interested for a few people's opinions as to whether the morning is a possibility.
Right, we will start a
Thank you. There's what I said you could ask. continue with it. I thought we'll still be on the speech, but I'll send you.
Thank you so much. Okay. Thank you so much.
You also have my son. You go to the family event. We still have taken him to the family event. Send him an email and say that I'll be coming with him.
Yes, good. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Yes. He sat there, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was just asking about the...